You are listening to a Commonwealth Bank of Australia Global Economic and Markets Research Podcast. This podcast provides general market-related information and is not intended to be an investment research report. The information contained in this podcast is based on previously published material, and before listening, you're advised to read the full Global Economic and Markets Research Disclaimers, which can be found at combankresearch.com.au.
Welcome to the Global Economic and Markets Research Podcast. My name is Belinda Allen and I'm a Senior Economist here at CommBank, and today I'm joined by Martin Whetton, our Head of Fixed Income and Currency Strategy. Martin, good to have you on today.
Thanks for having me on.
Now, we are going to talk about a very specific topic today, and that is the end of LIBOR.
Yes.
And what it means. But before we get into that, for all our listeners out there who may not be as familiar with it, what is LIBOR?
Great question. LIBOR stands for London Interbank Offered Rate. It's a floating rate of interest across many currencies. Mostly US dollars is what the reference is. But it's been around for about 40, 50 years, and it is the underpinning of almost every financial transaction in the world. So it's probably the most important number that most people have never heard of.
I like that analogy. And so why is it the most important interest rate out there?
It sets the benchmark rate, or it sets the rate for around $200 trillion US dollars worth of derivative and loan contracts. If you're a borrower, particularly in the US market, all of your loans will be based off LIBOR to some degree, a mortgage, a floating rate note, a corporate loan, and so forth. And so it really is sort of the plumbing, if you like, of the financial markets in many, many ways.
So it has been in the news in the past decade or so, because there has
been... For all the wrong reasons.
Exactly, for all the wrong reasons. So that's where our listeners may have heard of it. So with those scandals behind us and with regulators having done a lot to make it safer, why are they changing it?
Yeah, a hard question, because the financial scandals that we had over the last decade were related to the way it was manipulated, or allegedly manipulated. And it was set as a... It's a number that really is based not on transactions that take place, but on expectations of where those transactions would place. So that did leave it a little bit open. And for many years, it probably wasn't as gamed as people suggested it was. But what the regulators have tried to do is say, we've got to move it away to something called an RFR, or a risk-free rate. And that is a standard that they're being applied to all markets across the world. And LIBOR, the hardest one to get rid of because it really underpins so much, was one that they had to fix first to make sure it was working, and it is. And then they had to move to something that was a standardised process across the world, which is this risk-free rate. And in the case of the replacement for LIBOR, it's something called SOFR, or SOFR, depending on how you want to pronounce it.
So I guess, as you said, that's the replacement rate. So how is it different to LIBOR?
Yeah, as I said, LIBOR is where you expect rates to be. And it's over the 1, 3, 6 and 12-month periods. But SOFR is a rate that is based on transactions that take place in the interbank lending market. So when you borrow securities, US Treasuries as the, I guess, the ultimate risk-free rate out there, the cost to borrow those is the overnight funding rate, or the repo rate, as it's also called. And SOFR is based off that. And so it's less prone to manipulation for certain, but it's also something that gives you actual transactions in the market. It is, I would say, not without its faults. It does have some shortcomings, but I guess from a regulatory point of view, all of the regulators who are looking at this say, if we have a standardised product across all markets, or an overnight repo rate for government securities in all markets, then we're talking apples and apples rather than apples and pears, or apples and oranges, whatever you like. And when they seek to replace it, the contracts that were existing on LIBOR will stay there, but they'll be replaced for new with a SOFR rate.
Okay, and so there's obviously, I guess, a staggered time frame for when all these changes are getting made. When does a new rate apply from?
Yeah, so at the end of this year, you're going to get rid of yen, Swiss franc, sterling, euro, LIBOR, which don't really trade that much anyway, and they're largely irrelevant rates, but they're getting rid of them then, and those markets all have their overnight repo rates, or their SOFR equivalents. But because of that size, that $200 trillion.
It's a huge amount.
It is. And also because despite this being in the news for the last few years, many borrowers are still reluctant to shift over.
Mm.
And so they're giving it an 18-month grace, but they've said very firmly, that's it. So 30th of June 2023, LIBOR will cease to exist as a product in the US dollar market.
So for us here in Australia, who just really, I guess, borrow in the Australian market and may not be as thinking they're as reliant on the US dollar LIBOR or the new replacement rate, what does it mean both for borrowers but also for people who issue debt?
Yeah, so while we do generally borrow in the Australian market for most things, and obviously a very clear example would be the Australian government, many corporates borrow in foreign currencies because they might have US dollar exposure, so they issue debt or raise debt in that market. But also the banks themselves borrow in many different currencies, swapping those cash flows back into Australian dollars, because they're lending out Australian dollars ultimately in the bulk of their transactions. And LIBOR is part of that trade. So that's going to have to be replaced by a new rate. Now, LIBOR kind of represented the spread of where banks lend to other banks. SOFR is a secured transaction.
Mm.
So that's where you lending government security. So it's actually a lower rate. So what they've had to do is come up with a level that SOFR sits underneath LIBOR. And so it's an adjustment in the pricing of the money. And they've fixed those rates across all tenors and all currencies. And so that will apply from the end dates of 31 December and 30 June 23. And it'll matter to Australian borrowers and issuers, because many of them will have existing swap or contracts or they'll have debt or loans outstanding in foreign currencies, and they're paying the reference rate of LIBOR. So they have to change their language. Now, this is a bonanza for the lawyers. this is going to keep them busy for a long period of time. But it's also a change in documentation and what's called your fallback rate, what rate you have to pay once LIBOR disappears.
It's certainly going to be a process that everyone will need to keep a top on, I guess, as LIBOR does end.
It is. And, you know, while I said many people have been sort of sitting back waiting for this to happen, unfortunately with that, it has meant that many borrowers haven't really done the legwork to get themselves ready for it. So that is something that, you know, you really need to be on top of as a borrower or debt issuer. And even those who have not been to the markets lately will have legacy contracts that will have a reference to LIBOR in there. You've got to change that paperwork. And, you know, it is an expensive task for people to undertake, but it's a very important one and necessary.
Yes, yeah. Given LIBOR is going to end.
It is going.
Martin, appreciate your insights as to the end of LIBOR and what everyone should be doing, I guess, as a result.
Thanks very much.
Now, you can read Martin Wetton's report on LIBOR, The End is in Sight, which was published on the 8th of March 2021 on combankresearch.com.au.